Carl Herman, Mission Viejo, Joe Olson, Houston, Texas, Chris Weiner, Fort Myer, Florida, for the news that you need to know. First up, this is 9/11. And on this anniversary, I do invite everybody to educate yourself well enough, or at least be able to point to resources that demonstrate that 9/11 is an essential lie and crime. And one of the resources I recommend is our own Jim Fetzer's 9/11, What Happened, Who Was Responsible, and Why. And that will be, that link will be in the show notes, of course. And then we have James Corbett's 5 minutes. It's just so brilliant. I'm just going to go ahead and play it.
On the morning of September 11th, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat-trained pilots on four commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down three buildings with two planes in New York. While in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10th, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, PTEC, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly, answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victims' family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes into buildings.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO. The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide. This man never existed, nor is anything he had to say worthy of your attention, and if you say otherwise, you are a paranoid conspiracy theorist and deserve to be shunned by all of humanity. Likewise him, 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 and her. And her, and her, and him. Osama bin Laden lived in a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, but somehow got away. Then he was hiding out in Tora Bora, but somehow got away. Then he lived in Abbottabad for years, taunting the most comprehensive intelligence dragnet employing the most sophisticated technology in the history of the world for a decade, releasing video after video with complete impunity and getting younger and younger as he did so, before finally being found in a daring SEAL team raid which wasn't recorded on video, in which he didn't resist or use his wife as a human shield, and in which these crack special forces operatives panicked and killed this unarmed man, supposedly the best source of intelligence about those dastardly terrorists on the entire planet. Then they dumped his body in the ocean before telling anyone about it. Then a couple dozen of that team's members died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. This is the story of 9/11, brought to you by the media which told you the hard truths about
his head could be seen to move violently forward.
And
They took the babies out of the incubators.
And
mobile production facilities.
And
the rescue of Jessica Lynch.
If you have any questions about this story, you are a batshit, paranoid, tinfoil, dog-abusing baby hater and will be reviled by everyone. If you love your country and or freedom, happiness, rainbows, rock and roll, puppy dogs, apple pie, and your grandma, you will never ever express doubts about any part of this story to anyone. Ever. This has been a public service announcement by the friends of the FBI, CIA, NSA, DIA, SEC, MSM, White House, NIST, and the 9/11 Commission. Because ignorance is strength.
All right, gentlemen, let's stop here. And let's go ahead and make sure that Joe and Chris says anything that they want about the technical details or anything as an introduction of what they think an audience should know about 9/11. Joe.
Yes, well, that's the whole problem. It's such a complicated thing that you can't really cover it in a 3 or 4 hour documentary because it's just absurdly complicated. But all of the pieces, when you put them together, show you a really coherent picture of a government that is out of control, that did this intentionally and had planned it for decades in advance. And so we'll start going through a little bit of the predicate on how all this stuff was set up, but I'll let Chris have a few words first.
Yeah, I was thinking about L. Paul Bremer, another guy that decided not to go to work that day on 9/11, a guy from Marsh McLennan that did a lot of the risk and insurance type of underwriting for many firms, all of which were basically reset and restructured after 9/11, all of which were just wrought with corruption, collusion, extortion, greed, and pretty much, I think, responsible for the $2.3 trillion and then some that was missing from the Pentagon budget. All this stuff conveniently destroyed. These targets just seem to be all in the same place at the same time. And another thing that people don't really realize is that Bremer was the first governor of Iraq, and he was in there that was basically opening the door for American corporations to go in and take Iraqi resources under the fog of the War of Terror. And they had a seven-nation memo to which they wanted to topple and institute Rothschild central banks. And they pretty much have gone through these countries and have done accordingly for the most part. So, this is not an accident. This is conveniently 3 months after Goldman Sachs comes up with the BRICS initiative and then decides that over the next 20 years, they're going to basically take the U.S. Primary reserve currency, the dollar, out of the central reserve currency and create BRICS. So, I don't think it's any accident that these things happen in the way that they did. I think that they needed 9/11 to push the legislation for the full spectrum surveillance and the TSA stuff. And, basically for the common citizen to be walking on eggshells or turned into prisoners in their own homeland. So even the creation of the Homeland Security and anything else like that, this is all very much part of it. And, all these guys that are being named are crucial figures. I think Corbett does another good video with the 19 alternative suspects. And he really goes through the 19 guys that are probably more likely behind it than the hijackers that this was foisted on by the media.
Cool. I'll give it a minute overview of where I'm at with it. I have had lessons where I teach high school social studies students about 9/11, and I'll go into more detail on that later. But once you've laid enough of the evidence where you have a sufficient case to withdraw consent from the official story, that's, I think, that if you're pressed, you have to be able to just to point to the evidence. And James Corbett's video was excellent. And I'll talk about my experience in teaching high school students who really wanted to know and the questions that they ask most and the evidence that seemed to resonate most with them as the best case. But otherwise, we're in this contest. It's the emperor's new clothes. And this is one issue among 100 of similar magnitude. Something has to snap so that the public sees and is willing to speak in this emperor's new clothes transformation. But until we get there, we'll continue to go ahead and provide the evidence and encourage people to look for openings. Joe.
Yes. Well, in September of 2000, a group called the Project for the New American Century released their guidelines for United States dominance in the 21st century. And they said, we need to overthrow the terrorist governments in 7 Arab countries, including Iraq and Afghanistan, which we did by the false flag of 9/11. But then they turned around and used the CIA and the Arab Spring to overthrow the government of Tunisia, Yemen, Egypt, Libya, and then tried to overthrow Syria. And that's where Putin put his foot down and ended up stopping that particular domino. But yeah, that's all predicate. Then in January of 2001, Baby Bush was sworn into office. And one of the first things he did was disband the U.S. Army intelligence group called Able Danger, who had been using had it on my mind and now it slipped, but they've been using a computer echelon computer program to do word searches.
Promise software.
And they had identified four of the Mohammed Atta, the leader, and four of the other hijackers, and knew exactly where they were, knew exactly what they were up to, and they were ordered disbanded. And just like Covert said, they shredded terabytes worth of data that could have been useful in proving what was really going on. But those guys were absolute patsies. Then we had four FBI field officers that got reports from local flight schools, one in San Diego, one in Oklahoma City, or outside Oklahoma City, one in Arizona, and then one in Florida, that all reported Arab flight school abnormalities, where they would go in and they were trying to take just basic lessons, and then they wanted to jump immediately into doing 747s if they couldn't even fly a Cessna. One of those students was a guy named Zakaris Massari, who was drummed out of the flight school with 56 hours of dual time, and no instructor would sign him off to solo in a Cessna 150. He went up to Minneapolis, went to a flight school where they had flight simulators, and he said he wanted to take lessons on how to land a 747. Well, show us your logbook. And he did, and they went, well, you're not qualified for any kind of student loan. If we sell you time on the machines, it's $200 an hour. You'll have to pay cash. He pulled out $5,000 in cash, and they went, oh, okay. Well, you know, we'll be back in touch with you as soon as we schedule something. They called the FBI office August 16th, 2001. Agents Colleen Rowley and Harry Sammet arrested him. They were ordered by headquarters in Washington, D.C. Do not interrogate that and do not open his laptop. Other incriminating evidence, we had Susan Landauer, who was a liaison with the CIA, and she was talking with the folks over in Iraq, and she said there's a lot of chatter on the internet that planes are going to be flown into World Trade Center buildings. This was in May of 2001. She was the only one that was ever prosecuted over this, other than Zakaris Massari. She was put in jail for 2 years and offered repeated plea deals to say that she'd committed treason. She refused, and finally, when the evidence started coming out, they went, okay, and they released her without charges. Another one, Sybil...
Edmonds.
Sybil Edmonds, translator with the FBI. She said, we got reams of stuff here, and we've only got one or two people that are fluent in Farsi. There, it looks to like there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. That was prior to 9-1-1. Who was sworn in as the FBI director on September 4th? Oh, that would be Robert Mueller, the big cover-up guy, okay? So then we also, in June of 2001, we had the John Hopkins and Rockefeller dark winter exercise for a coming pandemic. So that's first up on the screen there. But then in July of 2001, NASA had Future Wars 2025 conference, in which they said that United States needs to have a traumatic event, trauma-based mind control, in order to have continuation of government. So NASA's even in on this shit. They had all of the air command, NORAD was either in stand down position, or they were doing exercises in Alaska and Nebraska, far enough away that they couldn't possibly respond, and you can't do that with just a couple of box cutters. So the whole thing's absolutely stupid. I'm a trained structural engineer. I've spent probably 5,000 or more hours studying this particular event in the World Trade Center buildings. I could care less about Shanksville or the Pentagon, because when you prove that they've done the biggest lie with the two Trade Center towers, then you don't have to prove every other lie in the book. And one of the things that I keep getting hung up on is people go, well, I saw the planes hit the buildings and you don't believe planes hit the buildings. So I'm not going to listen to anything you say. Or I saw the architects and engineers for 911 stuff on thermite. And you say that thermite wasn't done. So I'm not going to listen to you. Or I saw Judy Wood's videotape and she said that it was directed energy weapons. And I want to believe her. So I'm not going to believe anything you say. So it's like we have this cognitive dissonance where even if you have objective material, you cannot present it to people because they can't get out of their box long enough to figure out what you're talking about.
Joe, it's almost like you got a boot on your neck and the person next to you has got a boot on his neck and you guys are fighting over what size and what brand it is. You know what I'm saying? Rather than boot off. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly what you're talking about. And you know, that's just it, too. Everybody's in their own little cliques with these conclusions and conspiracy theories. You know, excellent points you're making there and great stuff you brought up. And there's so much more stuff you could add to it. Like, think about how Rumsfeld and Cheney put in the contingency of government plans in the lame duck Reagan administration right before Poppy Bush took office as president. And think about how, like, this whole thing has been created and been utilized to do exactly what it's done, you know, to basically take everybody's resources in these Arab lands and unite the world in terms of political capital against this population and depopulating it systematically at will for 20 years without any sort of compunctions, apologies, anything like that. This has just been a free-for-all in corporate socialism that has benefited from this, where these oil companies and energy companies have made money hand over fist. And really, the American people have borrowed money to foster this type of relationship, abusive one, I must add, too. So, yeah, our government has not served the public. They have served private interests, and they have deceived the public in every step of the way. And this was one of the first ones where the FBI actually had a live active false flag drill going on the same day in real time that the actual event was happening. So this was another groundbreaker for many things to come in the future. You know, they did something similar with Oak City and the Murrah Building. But yeah, this is absolutely abhorrent what these people have done and how the FBI has come in and actually taken over jurisdiction from local law enforcement investigators and basically declared it a federal act of terror and basically botched the investigation. I don't think they're going to really find anything investigating themselves. Do you?
Well, they probably did. They did manage to find an undamaged passport blocks away from the World Trade Center building. So yeah. Got to hand it to you. All right. Those gumshoes are really good.
I think this was a bank robbery, Joe. Joe, I almost think this was more of a gold robbery that really gone awry. And some of that had been proven, too. I mean, we talked about that in previous shows. What are your thoughts on that, too? Like them emptying all the vaults before the buildings came down?
Well, let's talk about Building 7. It wasn't hit by anything, but it did house the U.S. Attorney's Office. And what was in the U.S. Attorney's Office? The original on Enron.com and the Soros Oil for Food scheme. They were all due for prosecution. What was
Whitewater in Whitewater and Chinagate, too.
That was hit. That was the Cantor Fitzgerald bond company that lost 400 employees that day. They were the ones that had sold the bonds for Operation Hammer to Big Bush and his gang of Russian oligarchs that went in with $330 million and bought up all of collapsed Russia in 1991 on September 11th. The bonds were due that day, and they were up for sale, and it was going to be nobody buying them because they were all junk bonds to begin with, but that was just another $330 million clip that the Bush gang did to us before they left office. Now, getting back to my experience with this, I went to the Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth original DVD in Austin, Texas in May of 2009 with Richard Gage and Alex Jones. I watched their four-hour presentation. I watched all the material. I looked at the signed, sealed drawings for the Trade Center buildings. One and two were exactly the same building. Seven was slightly different, but I looked at all of the New York City approved plans. They were consistent with everything that I've seen in hundreds of multi-story structural steel buildings that I've been in my whole life and worked in. So I knew that it was not thermite, but I didn't know exactly what it was. I had my suspicions. But then in May of 2014, Veterans Today started running a series of articles called Nuclear Education. And by the time a year went by, in March of 2015, they'd already published 24 articles. I'd read them all cover to cover and vetted every science fact that I wasn't aware of. I had my first interview with James Fetzer, and we called it Unequivocal 911 Nukes. It was up on YouTube for several years until Jim got stuck in the Sandy Hook mess, and then YouTube banned all of his stuff and wiped it off the channel. So I don't even know if that exists anywhere at all, but it was a great interview. Then, as time went on, I did more and more research. I was contacted by Robert David Steele in 2018 to write a memo to the president. And here were the instructions. He said, Trump will not read more than 2 pages, so you can't write more than 800 words, and he won't look at anything that doesn't have a picture with it. So people that were involved in this included Scott Bennett, Kevin Barrett, Christopher Bolin, who I met in Austin. We'll get to that in a second. Steve Diak, who gave me some great information. Gordon Duff, who's the editor at Veterans Today. I've had James Fetzer, Richard Gage, who I met, like I said, in Austin. Met him twice in Houston, and then I met him a third time in Austin in 2023, April 2nd, and was there for 3 hours. And then we interviewed him on TNT Radio. So Nick Kohlerstrom, who's we're going to be doing an interview with him shortly. Susan Landauer, who we'd mentioned before. John Lear, who is a pilot and one of the founders of Pilots for 911 Truth. Joe Olson and Robert David Steele. But anyhow, these are the 28 authors. My particular article was Twin Towers Destroyed Using Clean Nukes. And this is available on Robert David Steele's website. I've also got an interview with him on BitChute that you could probably find. And there's the picture of the building, Mr. President. You want to know what we're looking at? That's not jet fuel. That's not thermite. So anyhow, after my article was posted at Veterans Today, my unequivocal 911 nukes on July 30th, 2019, I was contacted by one of my readers. She said, you need to read the Palmer Report. Here's the Palmer Report. The red arrows indicate 110-story tall buildings that collapsed in 14 seconds following a 2.2 Richter scale explosion in the basement of the buildings exactly 14 seconds prior to the collapse in each building. So they were separate little nuclear events. They planted a probably 1 kiloton plasma bunker buster bomb on the bottom of the floor of the buildings on the granite bedrock and focused it up through the building. The guys that wrote the Palmer Report was four PhD physicists from Europe, two from Germany, one from Belgium, and one from France. And they had done a great job, but they didn't understand much about building construction or nuclear isotopes. But they did mention that iron has 4 stable isotopes. So I looked it up. Iron has not only 4 stable isotopes, it has 24 radioactive isotopes. I did a search on the other common materials that are inside a building. Steel is made out of carbon and iron, and then concrete is made out of calcium, silicon, and carbon. And those 4 elements together have over 100 available radioactive and stable isotopes. Then you also add in the other building components, which would be the sulfur that's in the sheetrock and the sodium and phosphorus that are in the granite bedrock underneath. And you've got 150 available isotopes. Those have an average half-life of 90 days, which is what was smoldering 2,500 degrees hot in December after the event happened. So that cannot be explained by directed energy weapons, cannot be explained by thermite or conventional explosives. It can only be explained by radioactivity.
I'd also like to point out, how many reports were there of not only the advancing Israelis, but moving companies and many other Israeli companies and double agents that were caught by local law enforcement agents with radio jamming equipment? And of course, had been caught wiring the buildings up, towers 1, 2, and even 7 in the weeks previous moving into 9/11. Silverstein buys this miraculous home run hitter contract in July of 2001 that pays off, what was it, $130 million contract, pays off $4.5 billion. The guy himself says that they decided to pull Tower 7, and nobody even questions this guy. This is one of Trump's buddies. So, yeah, I don't understand why people are so confused on this. It's almost like a selective ignorance, like you say, Joe, where they don't really want to believe or look for the truth. They want to find something that they want to believe and just stick to that.
Okay, the Palmer report, which I discussed a little bit earlier, has 45 PowerPoint slides showing exact sequence of operation for the whole entire thing. It's got three 90-minute videos that explain it, a 5,000-word article. When originally posted at Veterans Today on September 1st, 2019, it had 80 nuclear education articles that I had read every one of those as they were being put up contemporaneously. Okay, now, something else, we're going to get back to the building airplane impact. This is from FEMA's 403 chapter 2, and this shows color-coded the outside waffle panels on the exterior of the building. These were three-story tall segments that had three columns, vertical columns each, that were 16 by 16 exterior. The wall thickness varied depending on where they were located in the building due to the weight and wind loads that were needed to be carried down to the ground. But the horizontal bands that are in this photo, or what's known as spandrel sections, that was 52-inch high, 2-inch thick plate steel welded to the floor joists on all three floors, spliced, bolted between each one of the horizontal segments, and then in-bolted to the vertical box beam segments. Again, this shows a set of waffle panels. Two of the waffle panels were completely from the other wall panels, saw cut, plasma laser cut from the floor joists that were connecting to them, and then blown out with shaped charges prior to the impact. And the impact, and you can see it in this particular photo, the impact shows the open hole where the planes supposedly hit, where each of the engines was on the planes. And then you can see the horizontal deflection of the 16 by 16 box columns as a missile hit the building from the side and cut through to make the appearance of where the wings were. So they needed to have something to make a soundtrack to make it believable that the CGI airplane hit the building. So what they did is they used a missile that went in at 500 miles per hour, which is above the VMAX for 1,000-foot altitude 767s. Get over it. You know, I've solo 200 hours, a dozen different airframes with a whole bunch of different FIs, and I've been in aviation my whole life. And I can tell you that this is absolute bullshit that planes hit those buildings. So then in September 11th, 2016, I attended a conference, the Austin Truth Fest, with speakers Christopher Bolin, who has an excellent book called Something, about 300 pages of all of the Jewish connections for the money and the judges and the lawyers and the cover-up artists and everybody involved. This was a 100% Mossad Khazarian mafia operation. One of the other speakers was Jim Mars, who is the one that was instrumental doing research on the JFK assassination. And there again, we've got 60 years of waiting to have those documents released. Why? Who are we protecting at this point, other than the same rotten government that pulled every one of these rotten tricks, which is World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, JFK, RFK, MLK, the Wu flu, the crisis, outs for every different bank system. All of this is being orchestrated by the same group of criminals, and we're doing nothing about it. And we're not going to let you sit on your butt another 22 years waiting for them to release the information that, oh, well, who would have known that somebody could fly airplanes into the buildings? Or they could maybe just use CGI and blow them up with nuclear bombs. It's crazy.
Look at what they're doing with the vaccine data right now. How long you got to wait to find out what Pfizer's real clinicals were and stuff like that. They're wanting to wait 75 years for that, 75 years for JFK, 75 years for, you know, everything. It's absolutely abhorrent. These guys have no accountability, and they're putting such a massive death count on the entire global population. And with this type of theatrics that they're creating, and then it becomes the justification for their military campaigns at that point and their endless surveillance. So, this is all justification to put this technocratic feudalism on us and use the nation state or the corporation as an instrument to do so. And, this terrorism thing, I think Netanyahu had a conference in 79 where they talked about creating Muslim terror groups. And, you know, of course they did. They created Hezbollah and Hamas and many of these other terror groups, similar to like how they did with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. You know, most of these guys come from the intelligence agencies or assets like that. So, this is not an accident. And you can say arguably the same thing's going on with much of the protests that are happening with BLM and Antifa and even some of the J6 stuff. How many FBI informants or assets or agents did they have running that type of thing? The ADL has been running the PACCON thing for 20 years on the Patriots in the 90s, 80s and 90s, going after white nationalists. And they're doing it again now. Biden says he's going after white nationalists as the most dangerous threat to national security. Well, if this is national security, and, you know, I guess maybe they understand that it is the white nationalist that is probably has the most information, has the most reasonable doubt, and has certainly probably lost the most in terms of personal and you know, family sacrifice and economic sacrifice here. So, yeah, this is a big deal. And I agree with you, Joe. I mean, if people are going to let these things fly like this every decade or every two decades, every generation has a 9/11. You know, one will be like COVID with the vax. One will be like JFK. One will be like 9/11. These guys do this all the time, and people forget about it, and they just go back to just surviving on this treadmill.
We do need to have some sort of a breakthrough before the public is going to have that emperor's new clothes moments. And Joe, thank you for the abundance of technical evidence. I do recommend to our audience that among the abundance of evidence, be able to point to three areas where you feel comfortable to be able to explain and then point to the documentation to be able to make your case. And in the bigger picture, yeah, it is a terrorist network of Orwellian deceit that we're operated by. And that's what we got. And we're going to need apparently some help because, as I keep repeating, after 46 years engagement for the Great Awakening, it seems that about 2% of the public can hear. But that said, among all the contractors I've gone in and out here of Mission Viejo, probably like 20, all of them except one were really paying attention and had something to say about the corruption that they were seeing. So it might be in the background. We are ready to go. We shall see. Gentlemen, anything else that you want to say up to this point? Because then I want to jump in. I got a segment where I want to talk about how it was teaching 9/11 to high school students and the memorandum to President Trump that I wrote also. But Robert said, nah, I didn't want to put it in there. It was a different topic. It would have confused him.
Yeah, Carl, if you don't mind, I'd like to jump in and talk a couple of things, and maybe Joe can add a little bit too after he hears my comments. I remember hearing reports and seeing, obviously, in the towers coming down, that these floors were like wired and they were detonated, and they were dropping floor by floor as this thing was dropping. And like you say, it's an 1,100 foot building in 14 seconds. Amazing, just like Tower 7, not hit by anything yet, it falls to the ground like that. So these are some important things I think we really, you know, that point to malevolence at best, and certainly the official narrative is evaporated in the presence of some of these facts. So I think it's really something that people got to pay a lot of attention to. But if we're at the point where 2% know what really happened, we outnumber these guys 2-1, mathematically speaking.
And they just had another mass casualty event, and that's the Dew event out in Maui. And that's what people are pointing to and saying, well, see, they do have Dew weapons, and they did use those on 911. No, there's a distinction between that, okay? And that's another little thing that I want to clarify. First of all, there's three types of directed energy weapons. One of them is lasers, which is a polarized light, which is amplified and focused, and it has like a horizontal range of 5 kilometers and a vertical range of 1,500 kilometers. Great if you want to shoot down Starlink satellites and vaporize them in space. That's great. But you're not going to be doing from space down and vaporizing a building of that particular magnitude because the power input is absolutely enormous. The other one is microwaves. Those are great for warming stuff up and creating conditions for fire. And I also came across a recent paper that they're using X-rays now. This is by Dr. Simon Mishkaux, M-I-C-H-A-U-X, who's with the Geological Survey of Finland. And it was an interview that he did on Decouple Media, but they're using electrodynamic fragmentation for recycling concrete instead of using a crusher because they're able to recover the aggregate and reuse it. And so that's a method of destroying concrete using microwaves. So definitely that exists. The other one is plasma, high-speed particles, and those are what they use to develop the bunker buster bomb, which replaced the mother of all bombs, the 30,000-pound bomb that can only be delivered by a B-52, which are incredibly vulnerable to any type of air defense and, you know, limited accuracy. And it could fragment 1,000 feet of granite, but a bunker buster bomb of a fraction of the size be delivered by an F-35 is capable of boring through 4,000 feet of granite. And anytime it hits a conduit, a pipe, or a corridor, it will fill the whole thing up with superheated gases. And so you can exterminate a 4,000 foot deep area just by sending a single bunker buster bomb down. So these things have been replaced with more efficient things. But the more important thing is there again, I'm going back to the Palmer report. The last two slides of the Palmer report show the 100 foot deep crater that was eaten out by nuclear vaporization underneath the buildings that was completely filled with the steel rubble that should have been 13 stories high on those buildings when they fell, and it was down in a hole underneath it. And their photos show giant track hoes, 3-story high track hoes, digging down and pulling the material up from, and you can see the metamorphosized granite underneath there. That was a horizontal granite foundation underneath that building that they couldn't drill into any more than just putting an elevator shaft, because it was had a 100-foot wide, 40-foot tall glacial till fill between them and the Hudson River. And had they done blasting in the basement area of the World Trade Center buildings, they would have shattered that retaining wall and they would have flooded all of Manhattan. So the building only had 6 floors of basement underneath the buildings, and that's why you didn't have a 100-foot deep hole under each one of those buildings. And they built reflection ponds because water is a great absorber of gamma rays, and gamma rays are given off by the radioactive isotopes. And so they built reflection ponds at World Trade Center 7 and 1 and 2 in order to cover up. And the other interesting thing is you mentioned the gold. Yeah, that was in Building 7. That's the rectangular volcano that you see right here in this particular photo. Yeah, they planted a nuclear bomb in the basement of that one too.
Cool. Unreal. Anything else, gents?
You can let it move on. We got a lot of stuff to cover. So I'm sure people have heard this a million times, and if they haven't, well, at least they're hearing it the first time now.
Yeah. Well, great overview, and certainly we have all the resources. And Joe, whatever resources that you want to share, either send them to me or put them in the show notes here at BitChute. And you guys were talking about a heist, and a heist is exactly what I think happened, and that is exactly what did happen. And that was kind of the basis for what I wanted to present to the president for his consideration. But what I want to talk about first is the power of truth. So in teaching, in anonymous end of semester surveys, the average grade that students would give me as a teacher was A+. And one of the ways that I did that in teaching U.S. history and world history is I would tell the students, say, hey, you know, so we got these historical tools, and you should really consider as a human being, what would you most want to know if you could know anything in history? And we would take this seriously. And I said, I got a lesson. And it's about applying critical thinking skills to case studies. And whatever case study you want, I'll cover. And I would let them vote. And this took several days. And it came down to, in this lesson here, we want to discern fact from spin. We want to participate in civil conversations based on the facts and then engage in a policy position of what to do about this. And the choices of the students came down to these top three: the assassination of President Kennedy, of what happened on 9/11, and UFOs. And actually, they also wanted to know, was Jesus for real? That was one of the major ones as well. And because Jesus is the most studied individual by professional historians, that's really a interesting lesson of what actually we have from the historical sources. So I have the lesson set up, and students would want to know about 9/11. And the lesson is here, but you know, you present the side, the official side that they had been accustomed to, and that is in the textbook. And then you take a look at the actual, some of the sources, and some of the sources supposedly for the official position ends up refuting it. And as you guys were talking about, it turns out that all of the physical evidence is consistent with some form of controlled demolition, and the energy required to transform office buildings into that particular size dust over that volume can only be explained by an addition of energy and of all the information. So for the students, I would chat about this a little bit. So the students had an option of they could write a paper about some detail that they wanted to write about. They could give a talk to the class, and they could write just a standard paper, which is, you know, explain what you think happened here. And for 9/11, the results were about 2/3 of the students were absolutely lit up by it. And they saw for themselves, and they were excited about at least having the truth. And about the remaining third, about half of those, so like 1/6 of them, would be quiet. So I wouldn't be able to tell where they were at in class, but what they wrote or presented showed that they were fully paying attention and could see that this was an official lie. And then about the other third, nobody ever in the years that I did this, which was just probably about 10 years, no student ever attempted to defend the official story. Now, I think about either that remaining 1/6 of the students, they couldn't defend the official story, but I think that they were still clinging to it. I was just trying to get a read of the class. So that's how students responded. And my overall optimism for once we have this breakthrough and the truth is presented to people from having presented these facts to both students and sharing it up front with their parents each and every time, so that, and inviting the parents to contribute anything. Hey, you think I got anything wrong? Do you have any areas of expertise you want to share with the class? You know, please bring it. You're welcome anytime, not just for this, but anytime that you want to come to class, you can come to class. So I was very optimistic with how students responded, but you know, we're still chatting about it and needing a breakthrough to help us out. All right, gentlemen, any comments on that one?
Yes, this is the...
No, that's awesome, Carl. I remember him. Oh, go ahead.
This is FEMA, Federal Emergency Management, the 403 underlying chapter 2. It's like 40 pages long. And I don't know if I mentioned the actual title of my responding article to the Palmer Report, which was exposing the NIST Jenga game. National Institute of Standards and Technology, they wrote a report that said, well, the building just collapsed. There's nothing you can do about it. They haven't changed any building codes because you couldn't build a better building than that. And then this from the FEMA, this shows the bar joist connection to the floor joist. These articles are posted at Veterans Today, and then also discuss them in a video that I just sent Carl a link to, an hour-long BitChute video that Jim and I did. So, yeah, I'll debate absolutely anybody on the planet on this. because I understand what's going on and I can't be bullshitted. And you can't just sit in the comment section and be an armchair general that never had a single day of structural engineering class and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about and that Judy Woods is right, or that Richard Gage, who never had a science class in his architectural degree plan. I've talked to him in person. He never took a physics or chemistry class. So there's no way that he knows what's going on in structural engineering. He comes in with his thermite hypothesis. Thermite is not a catalyst. So if you have thermite in the dust, that thermite was not used in the destruction of the building, because you don't get thermite by burning thermite. What happens when you have aluminum coated building with 2,200 tons of aluminum in the exterior, and you've got steel columns that are 30 years old with a little bit of oxide, when you vaporize gamma ray radiation, you end up with iron molecules floating around looking for something to attach to, and aluminum molecules going, and it will form nanoparticle thermite that will flocculate out as dust around the building. And that's where it came from, being placed in the building as charges, number one. Number two, to do 110 floors of buildings simultaneously in two separate events and not have a single failure of a single internal explosive is absolutely incomprehensible. You have to go in, and the buildings are only 50% occupied, but there's no way you could do it on every floor at every connection and have all of those things go off perfectly timed without the buildings falling over one way or the other sideways. I've watched dozens of videos on controlled demolition, and I've gone to forensic engineering classes my whole life, so I know exactly what the hell's going on. And anybody wants to argue with me, find out, prove that you're capable of having a reasonable discussion, and I will prove to you that anything that you're trying to challenge me on is incorrect, because I've looked at it very objectively and very professionally for 22 years.
Good point. Strong, brother. Thank you. Chris.
Yeah, it's plain as day. When you watch those towers come down, you can see that, and you even hear accounts of that. And I think there was maybe even some stuff that happened prior to that that caused some destruction in the lower basement, lower levels, that, you know, that destabilized the building's, you know, primary structure points. I don't know what they used. I'm not going to sit here and argue with anybody over what it exactly was or what kind of bomb it was, but it was, it's provable and evident that there was in fact some sort of malevolence, like a bomb or something of the nature. So whether it was nanothermite, whether it was a directed energy weapon, whether it's scalar, whether it's anything, it really is inconsequential. I mean, not to say it doesn't matter, but, like, you know, we already know that there's some people behind this, and it's certainly not, you know, the official narrative with the 1900s, much, much deeper. So I guess, you know, when you start peeling back this onion and getting to the bottom of things, you know, 20 years later, the benefit of hindsight, it's a lot easier to see the cui bono and what really this was all about, and what, you know, what they used this thing for, the never let a crisis go to waste situation. Do you remember right after World War II, there was a B-52, I think, that hit the Empire State Building, and it did nothing like what happened on that day. So, I mean, it's just them really toying with your perceptions and toying with, you know, your fear, and look what they've done with it.
Yep. All right, gentlemen, anything else? Otherwise, I'll talk about the memorandum that I contributed to Robert David Steele, which kind of is the biggest picture of what I would want to say about 9/11.
Can I jump in and just say, hey, man, I really appreciate you as a teacher doing that for kids, challenging them in that way. I was fortunate enough to have teachers that were of a very similar mindset and took the time and generosity to share their knowledge and wisdom with me. And I'm eternally grateful for that. And, you know, I just want to thank you for just being you. And you know, it's sad that good teachers like you are run out of the system by the Common Core LGBTQ perverts that they're putting on in your place.
Yep, temporarily. They gave me a hit, that's for sure.
Temporarily, man. That's good. I like it.
Yep. All right. Next, let's see. Where is this thing? It's over here. All right. I do want to talk about the big picture that I see, which is the heist that took place, the colonial heist, and this memorandum for the president that Robert asked me to go ahead and contribute. I just want to go over the main points and, you know, whatever resonates with people that they can use as their own talking points, or if this is a document that's helpful for them, that's great. So first of all, The wars on terror, lie started and Orwellian, illegal, all of the reasons given to go to war were lies known to be false as they were told. These were known lies, and that is from our own government's most secure, most authoritative agencies. But, you know, corporate media just lies about it. The WMD, the aluminum tubes, Saddam wanted to get or attempted to purchase enriched uranium, cooperation with that's all bullshit. They made it up, and the documentation demonstrates it. And then corporate media, they're criminally complicit because it is not reasonable that these are mistakes when these facts are also known. And this was Operation Iraqi Liberation. That was the first name of the operation until enough smartasses like me started mocking it. And, you know, this is Orwellian opposite to what is a lawful war, two world wars, two treaties, and the use of the military is illegal except for a narrow definition of self-defense. If you are under attack, you can use up to lethal force, of course, but you can't go into another nation unless it's that nation's government who have attacked you. And then some of the background that the U.S. has been a rogue state empire, and the U.S. has killed about 30 million in these the operation since World War II. That's more than the Nazis in World War II. And the people that they allow to die from preventable poverty is more than all the wars and murders and any acts of violence in human history. And we can count up how much these wars cost. And that was the first brief. You guys have any question or comment? Otherwise, I'll go to the second one.
Yeah, I would just like to say, remember they appointed L. Paul Bremer, the guy that was like a Kissinger assistant with Linebacker and many other, you know, depopulation events in the Nixon administration, guy that is, you know, ties with the deep state and then some, Hague and many of the other UN, you know, apparatus. He was appointed the first governor of Iraq. And also, you know, what happened with that, there was an element of fear and terror where not only drone strikes were happening, you know, you see collateral murder and things of that nature. It was far, far more aggressive than that as far as when the troops start rolling in and any resistance was completely destroyed and life was, dehumanized to such a manner where they were paying $2,000 per casualty for anybody that lost any loved ones in this invasion. So it really... It lost touch of our country's purpose, our grip on, with humanity, and certainly serving the will of the citizens, in my opinion. And the media was very much complicit, again, going along with creating this propaganda and this sense of duty and patriotism and pivoting that terror that they caused, that trauma-based mind control that they used to influence people and steered it into this mass murder campaign that was given in a different manner to the public. It was a PR thing where they were talking about all these buzzwords and all this jargon, but in a sense, they were just going in and taking their stuff and calling it, democracy, serving democracy. So I want to point these things out. And, you guys remember, like, they strong-armed some congressmen with anthrax, I thought, too. And there's some other things that were pretty shady going into this stuff. So if you guys want to maybe give some of the younger viewers a little bit more of a perspective of what was going on from the people that are actually paying attention. Because some people really weren't looking for these things when this was going on. And some people still maybe didn't know this stuff. So I hope maybe we can help educate people with our memories.
Yep. Anything else, Joe?
Yes, three. 3 weeks after the 9-1-1 event, they did have the anthrax attack where they sent dozens of letters with anthrax, which was a nanoparticle-sized, militarized, aerosolized form of a poison, highly toxic. But everybody in the White House had been taking Cipro for 2 weeks to prevent having any kind of effects from the amazingly available anthrax, and they were proven that that particular strand was only produced at Fort Detrick. So that was an internal effort, and it went to news companies and senators that had voiced some opposition to going into the Iraq and Afghanistan. But let's back up, rewind just a little bit for the first Gulf War, which is another wonderful piece of theater. We had sold slant drilling equipment to drill bits to the Kuwaitis, and told them it was okay for them to sneak in and start stealing oil that was across the border in Iraq. And then we notified Iraq that that's what was going on. And Saddam Hussein said, well, you know, we need to order them to stop doing that. And at a state function, our ambassador told Saddam Hussein that, yes, they're stealing your oil and you probably should do something about it. But we're not going to interfere. That's a private matter between you and Kuwait. And then as soon as he invaded Kuwait to shut down the oil wells that were stealing oil from across the border in his country, then we attacked him, you know, and then we created the whole hoax about weapons of mass destruction that were. And I met Scott Ritter. I also met, you know, Christopher Bolin. I met Jim Fetzer at the JFK conference in 2018 up in Dallas. So, you know, I've been around the park. I know what's going on with all this stuff. And I meet people in person. I go to events in person. And I try to do the best objective analysis of this rotten world that we're having to deal with, because I see a far better world for all of us. And we've squandered $100 billion in carbon endangerment findings over an absolutely inert, trailing artifact, non-affecting climate gas molecule that is mandatory for life. And anybody that can support that particular agenda has got to be, first of all, an idiot, and second of all, they've got to be inhumane, because it is absolutely insane what we have wasted. And we could have provided clean drinking water and sanitary facilities for the whole population of the planet if that was an important priority, but it is not.
Yeah, the technical solutions, we have them all. We have them all. And this could be applied intelligently, but we have the parasites and the psychopaths who are in charge. And I just want to finish up and make this. So we have been talking for an hour, gentlemen, so I'll go ahead and brief people on what I wanted to share with Trump for his consideration in the second brief, and then I'll morph that into my final thoughts, and we'll go around, and then that'll be it. So one, I wanted to get an appreciation of the scale of the fraud, and that our parasite masters, they run an a wannabe empire, a rogue state empire, and it's about theft. It's about stealing resources, both natural and human. So in making an analogy for this, after 9/11, the United States demanded the extradition of Osama bin Laden, and the Afghan government said, sure, just tell us what evidence you have of him being involved in a crime, and the U.S. refused, and that the disproportionality and the blatant illegality just based on the trauma and the mind control is what happened. And if you want to read this analogy, and we can point to the real world cost data of the amount of money that was killed, including making that into a proportionate for each one of us and in the United States. And so for my final thought, again, all we can control is what we think and what we say and what we do. We can't control the responses of other people. All we can do is we can play a game. We can engage in the possibility of a breakthrough of truth, where the parasitic puppetician public serpents would be arrested for their obvious and ongoing crimes. But we still have the emperor's new clothes condition until we get such a breakthrough. And I'm still very confident that the leading edge of the breakthrough will be financial, and that it is not possible for this Ponzi scheme to go on forever. But who knows when it's going to break. Until it does, stick to what you can definitively control and do a good job here, Patriots. I appreciate your stand for truth. Joe, your final thoughts.
Yes. Well, I'm also a talk show host on TNT Radio. And 2 weeks ago, I had a great interview with Greg Mayberry. And it's up at Principia Scientific. I'll put it down in the show notes. But it was an hour-long discussion about stolen intellectual property. U.S. Patent Office has been stealing every significant patent for the last 150 years, and that includes telephone, and they set up monopolies for the Rothschilds and Rockefellers with the stolen patents. But that includes the telephone that was stolen from Antonio Meucci, creating the AT&T monopoly, the radio patents that were stolen from Tesla by Marconi, which created the RCA thefts. Then we have the NBC stealing Philo Farnsworth's patents for television.
stealing Howard Armstrong's patents for FM radio, the Super Heterodyne. And we also have the Wright brothers, who had 12 of their flight patents stolen so that the Rothschilds could operate their European manufacturing conglomerates without having any Wright brothers patents in affecting their development, further refinement of our developed technology. Wright brothers created aeronautical engineering. They created the first wind tunnel. They created the first measurements for lift on wing design and also for thrust on propellers. They created aviation, and they had their patents stolen until the Supreme Court in 1943 ruled that, yes, Tesla did have the legitimate patents for radio. The Wright brothers did have 12 original patents for aviation. But at that point, it was too late because all of the players were dead. Absolutely insane that we put up with this crap. But you got to know real history in order to fight fake history that is absolutely rampant on the web at this point.
Thank you, Joe. Chris, final thoughts.
Yeah, I think 22 years, and we still haven't officially sought or found any kind of justice for that, or even really returning back to our ways of life before 9/11. Those of us that didn't grow up in a police state or a security state like this, a surveillance state, really had a different childhood and a different experience with freedom, and certainly probably should cherish it and even remind the younger generations how important that is. Freedom is probably the only and most important thing we need to defend and need to have. And if we know the facts, the truth will set us free and hopefully put them in chains. So, yeah, these tyrants are trying to take your freedom, and they are experts at calling it, anything and everything else but that. So, this is a time that we need to really find our backbone and hold the trench, because if they're allowed to keep doing what they've been doing, humanity is not going to be the same, and I don't think we'll recover from that. And I agree with you, Carl. I think an economic setback will be the trigger that will really make much of the change we're talking about as far as catching the emperor with no clothes and certainly with no wallet or no ability to just print money out of nothing anymore.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you, audience members. We'll be back on Wednesday with more of the news you need to know.